Mont Camary for the Mill Workers Oral History Project on March 5th in Lewiston, Maine. I'm Skylar Haynes interviewing. And this is Jean. Could you please state your full name and spell it, please?
My name is Armand Camary, ArmandCamire.
Okay, thank you. And what is your place of birth and the date?
May 22nd, 1930.
Place of birth?
I was in Suncook, but they changed that to Pembroke.
Pembroke.
Yeah.
Pembroke.
New Hampshire. That's in between Manchester and Concord.
Okay. Great. And where did you grow up?
I grew up, we moved from New Hampshire. I was talking to my sister yesterday. We moved from New Hampshire, I think, 1932. And I was right here in Lewiston, Auburn for a good part of my young life.
Okay.
Up till until I was almost 60. Then I moved to Turner.
Turner, Maine? Is
that yes, Turner, Maine, yeah.
Okay. And what was the community like in Lewiston at that time?
At what time?
When you moved here, I guess.
Okay. Well, I remember way back, the only thing I remember about Lewiston, Auburn is 1936, the flood they had in 1936. It happened that we were living on Park Street,
mm-hmm.
and I was going over the bridge to Auburn,
right.
and there was 6 inches of water over that bridge.
Okay.
And that's the first time I remember this. But we were living on Park Street,
right.
and those days it was more crowded. You might there was more buildings. There was my sister was telling me when they first moved here in 1932, my father was a weaver in New Hampshire.
What mills?
I get everything in here, but I don't remember what mill.
But he was a mill worker as well.
He was a mill worker. Mm-hmm. And when they got laid off over there,
mm-hmm.
The base was asking for weavers.
Oh, okay.
So he moved the whole family down here. And I think at that time, had 6 or 7 brothers. And 4 others born here in Maine.
You had 6 or 7?
I had 11 brothers and sisters all together.
Oh my goodness. And where are you in line? Are you the...
I'm the middle one.
Right in the middle? I'm the middle child as well. Of 5.
Yeah.
Not 11.
Yeah.
Okay. So did your dad get you the job at the mill or did he...
When they first come here from New Hampshire, the Bates Mill on Canal Street, they had the houses for the workers. So when they first got here, they had a house right there. It was the company's house. All these buildings there on Canal Street.
Right.
And I remember when I was 6 years old about that, we had the, on Main Street and Lyndon Street, we had the trolley cars. They're going up and down. And Lisbon Street and Main Street was pretty well crowded together with buildings. These older buildings, there was on Main Street going down, there was the Littleton Hotel with Central Maine Power
mm-hmm.
things over there. And there was all buildings on this side of the street. And Lisbon Street, there was all kinds of businesses. Like Peck has been there for a long time, and there was J.C. Penney's,
mm-hmm.
and there was Sears Catalog Department on Main Street. And then as we went down Lisbon Street, there was all kinds of stores.
Right.
And that's when I was growing up. But when we moved to Park Street, after we moved out of what I would call it a project, the company houses.
So was it like a boarding house?
It was a small apartment house.
Okay.
Until we could find an apartment.
Okay.
And Pine Street is just a couple streets up.
Okay.
And that's when we moved there. I remember that quite a lot because there was a shoe store. The Gelbert brothers had a shoe store right there, and there was where the Salvation Army was. There was in the city building, the police office. There was all kinds of business there. And that bank, the First National Bank, right there in the corner, the post office was there. Mm-hmm. And on, I think it's Ash Street, going back up, mm-hmm. there was a little grocery store and a donut shop and all that stuff going through there.
Okay. What are your parents' names?
My father is Napoleon. Napoleon Camari, and
okay, and your mother's name?
Yeah.
What is your mother's name?
Okay, my mother is.
They can get this on the recorder.
Virginia Rondeau, her maiden name was Rondeau. Okay.
Right.
And these kids. All the grandchildren made this anniversary, 2001.
Oh, neat.
And they got all our history.
Okay.
And all that stuff. So my mother's name is Virginia Rondeau.
So what is your family's ethnic background? Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, my father come from Canada.
Okay.
And my mother, she was New Hampshire, and when my father, they met, my father and mother met in the mill up there. She was working in the mill, mm-hmm. and he was working in the mill, and that's how they got married.
Did they both speak French?
Yeah, and those days it was mostly all French.
All French?
Yeah.
Did you grow up speaking French in your house?
Yeah, we did, because when I was living on Lewiston, and I was going to St. Peter's Church,
okay.
All French.
Really?
Yeah, and when we moved, I was 7 years old when we moved from Lewiston to Auburn,
right.
Where my brother lives now, and it was all French, and when I went to the English school, I was put back to the first grade, so I lost 2 years. The transfer over,
right,
and so that was mostly all French, and my mother was always French. In fact, a lot of times we talked to her in English, she would answer us in French.
Neat.
So that's it. And my father's side there, he come from he was up in New Hampshire, and a lot of his brothers and sisters, they're all got French names.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What were your parents' occupations? Your father was a weaver.
My father was a weaver.
Right.
And my mother, after they got married with all these kids, she stayed home mostly all the time, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. 11 children, I would say. When did you begin working at the mill?
In 1948.
Sorry. Yes.
My father had a problem, and I went to work during the summer. I think I was 17 years old at the Bates Mill as a cleaner and a greaser.
What is a greaser?
A greaser. In those days, they had machinery, the weaving machines. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, when you lubricate a vehicle today, you have a grease gun.
Right.
In the old days, the old machine, they had open port oil you had to oil them with an oil can.
Oh, right.
Yeah, see? And it was an open, it's not like the new machinery today is all together, but I was a cleaner. And we clean the cotton looms with air hose. We had a big air hose, and we would push all the dust off the cotton, the spare cotton, all that. And we cleaned them all out. We swept the floors, swept the ceilings, because there was so much dust.
Right.
And that's how I got started at the base. That was about 1948.
Okay, and you were 17?
I was 17 years old, yeah.
Did you do it with your siblings, with your brothers?
Yeah, because my brother, Lucian, my oldest one, he was, when he came out of the Second World War, I think before he went to, in the service, he was working as in the weave room also. I don't think his trade was a weaver, but when he came out of the service, he came back in the Bates Mill, because in those days, there was the mills, there was a shoe shop, and there was lumber yards, little independent lumber yards, that you could find as a laborer. But as you got to be a more, what would you call, professional, as a weaver is a good skilled trade, and a fixer is like a mechanic.
Right.
Good trades, because you have to work yourself up, and we did have manuals to tell us how these machines. You get some of these machines that's a hundred inch long. The cloth was 100 inch long, and it's 2 feet on each side of that for the shuttle.
Right.
These shuttles would start over here with a bobbin in there. This would carry the thread to the other side. And the machine was pretty good machine. And one thing about the Bates Mill, when they put down a machine on the floor, they would line right up, just straight with a line and all that. And I was working in number one and two weave, which they call that a plain weave, sheet pillowcases. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, you had about 2 to 6 harnesses.
Right.
That would control the thread going in, and there was a reed that would keep it straight, and the harnesses would lift them up while this shuttle goes through one end to the other end. And shuttles go up, the harness would go up and down, the shuttles go back and forth. And in those days, there were, they called a pick ball that was on the cam, and they would hit that. And this was we had a lug strap coming out up there, and it would, and then over here, we had a bouncing rubber thing or leather, and this would take this and this would shoot all the way across.
Okay.
And then the harness would turn and it would be weave. And you have some of these looms. The Bates were very good in chemical. They were all kinds of cotton. You had the 116, 1 1/8, and you had the bill, and then in my department, but as you went down to number 5 is what they call a jacquard weave. It makes designs like tablecloths, designs, and all that, which is more. You had as much as 4 shuttles.
Right.
To make it, and then they would have what you call a card upstairs that would control the design.
Right.
On every loom, you had what they call a heddle, and the heddle was tied up to a string, and the string would go up to the, I think they call it computer, cards. You had little punch holes, and these little pins, you know, if there was no hole there, it would keep the thread up.
Okay.
And if there's a hole there, when it turns, it was a like a cylinder that would turn. Every time that turned, it would change the designs of the thing. Jacquard weave is like a,
right.
And they made the, what the Bates is famous for is the Martha Washington, the George Washington, which they call Terry's.
Right.
And
seen that.
And that's the main body of the blanket is a sheet like.
Mm-hmm.
And then the designs for the little what do you call it, knobs that would come up. This was controlled by the card that would make the design of the head and all that.
Right.
And then they had what they call the queens. The queens was the name of the blanket. It was all kinds of designs on it, and it was the Terry's and the queens. It was what they call a two-wop. A wop is the big spool in back, and there's on the Terry's there was probably a 500 or some odd thread coming down through these harnesses and these cards,
mm-hmm.
and they would and then the filling, these a different kind. If you would like to have a tight knit, you would have probably 110 picks. That means this has to go 110 times across.
Wow.
To make 1 inch of cloth.
Oof.
So it all depends on the on the quality of the cloth you want. And when we moved to Auburn, I was working at the Bates Mill now. We had the Caillé family, which I used to have a car, and they used to work second shift. Mrs. Caillé and her daughter, I forgot her name now, they used to travel with me at night. We were working second shift. I'd pick them up at 3 o'clock and bring them back home at 12.
You were 3 p.m. until 12?
Yeah.
Wow.
See, and those days we used to have half an hour break. They changed that to 8 hours straight after a while.
Oh my gosh.
But you still had your breaks. You had 10 minutes on the hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, to take a whatever break you want to be, you know?
Right. Wow. So you began as a cleaner, and
yeah.
then you moved your way up to a weaver.
Yeah, because the old weavers, they want to... to retire, there's some a lot of them they want to retire, especially number one and two weave, they've been there forever,
right.
And they were getting to the age that, you know, in those days they had no no pension plan, no
right.
nothing, this and that until the union got in there.
It was the union. Was that before you worked there?
It was well. I'll let you read that later. Yeah, about anyway. So it's there was no union. My father was very strong in the union.
Was he?
Yeah, and so there's an article in this book right here, all about the Bates. A good part of that when the Bates went on strike for 4 weeks,
right,
and we had a pay cut,
right,
and then we went back in. Because this and that, I was there before the union was there, and they didn't have too many safety things.
Right.
Because in the weave room you got the click clack click clack 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 clack, and the motors running, the shuttles going back and forth,
right.
The ping ball hitting. I mean, you couldn't hear. I mean, if you couldn't read lips, you couldn't hear nobody. And they didn't start till after 1950. That they gave you earplugs.
Earplugs.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And when I first started at the Bates Mill, I guess you had to have a physical to go in. And if you wasn't, you know, if your blood pressure was too high, they wouldn't hire you. And if you had any medical things, they wouldn't hire you. So a lot of these people that would come in, you know, that did have problems, well, how come they hired you and they didn't hire me? You know, because there wasn't, and they got stricken with that because of the insurance problem. That's when they started paying us a little insurance, you know.
Interesting. I saw in the, when we went on the trip, they had the spools, the leather spools to keep the mill moving.
Yeah.
Was that, that was before, I guess, you never saw any of those.
Yeah, when I worked, I've also, when I got laid off, I went to work in Manchester, Connecticut. And they had some of these old looms with the belt driven. And it was the very small looms, it was narrow looms. One thing that Bates is famous for is their wide, the bedspread.
Right.
And right after the Second World War, they decided to buy some new machinery. So we used to have the old looms going very slow.
Slowly.
You know, I mean, you could see the shuttle go back and forth, the harness. But after the Second World War, they bought the high-speed looms, draper looms, and CKs and all that. And it was just a little more modern type of machinery.
Interesting. What else? There were different ethnic groups when you were working in the mills.
Yeah.
Like the Franco-Americans and then other ethnic groups. Were there any conflicts between groups?
When there was a shortage of mill workers, when GE come in and a few others, and especially after the Korean War, or before the Korean War, a lot of people went to Hartford, Connecticut because they were paying more money, this and that. And we had a problem with workers. They couldn't get enough workers. And I was one of the weavers, and they asked me if they wouldn't mind me teaching somebody how to weave. And they imported all the Mexicans. And a lot of the workers didn't want to teach them because they were afraid they were going to take their jobs away from them.
Really?
You know? But there was so much work. And we had a family, I call him Rudolph and his wife. He came up here. And his wife, Rudolph, worked in the weave room. His wife worked, I think, in the spinning room. And I taught Rudolph how to weave. And he was there for quite a number of years, but a lot of people didn't want to teach. But there were so many French people in there, because that's all they used to do, talk French. And there were some of these older ladies. I get one lady that she, before she got married, she was working in the mill as a weaver. And then all of a sudden, when she started having her children, she got out of it. So for 10 years, she was a homemaker. And then when she come back again, she just took her job weaving.
Right.
And she was total French.
Right.
Yeah, real French, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay, what else? So how you got your job from your father, right? Or did
my father was in there, but it did help.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were there ways of getting favorite jobs? Did people, you said that the best jobs to have were weaving and a mechanic.
Yeah.
But were there people were there ways to get those jobs other than
just? Oh, you had to work up to them.
You had to
unless you come in as you were qualified as a weaver. Mm-hmm. Because when I started weaving, I was cleaning. Mm-hmm. And then at night, if you would get down a little earlier, mm-hmm. you would go to an old weaver and say, "You want to teach me how to weave?" And he thought, "I'd tie the knots, how to pass, make the hooks, and this and that, and then, you know, how to run the machines." Mm-hmm. And the old days, the old machines, they were slow machines, and there's a brake on these machines. But as they get older, the brakes let go. So you would bypass, it was supposed to stop right where, you know, stop. And you had to find out what caused that loom to stop. Was it a watt brake? Mm-hmm. Was it a filling brake? Was it a mechanical problem? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that, you know, you had to work your way up. So they needed weavers for, they needed weavers because they could see a lot of these people going to retire. And so they took me off cleaning and they put me on the pickout hand. A pickout hand is somebody that helps other weavers. And they used to put us on the, probably three or four weavers, and these would tell us what to do, what we're doing wrong, mm-hmm. and this and that. And then after they thought you were qualified, they would start with one or two looms. And three and four looms, see if you could do the work plus the quality of the loom.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Were there different jobs that females typically took versus men? Were there jobs that?
In the weave room. They would like to have a mechanic or a loom fixer being a man. But the woman, I mean, they could weave, and we had what they call battery tenders. This is what takes this bobbin out here. It's on a magazine around, number two weave, they were round magazines. But number five, where they had four different colors, it was a transfer magazine. It was four things, mm-hmm. and they were built so inward. But these were battery tenders. They would change. They would fill as we run our looms. These would automatic empty out, and then they had to replace them. And if you were a good weaver, and I was the weavers were paid on picks. That means we're paid on the, we had a clock on every loom, mm-hmm. and every time we had a pick, it changed. Probably every time it did 100 picks, it would change one number. Mm-hmm. So we're paid by this. So if this machine was down for mechanical problem or else something, we would lose 2 hours.
Oh my goodness.
So there were some weavers that didn't know how to weave good, or else they were still apprentice, and they didn't put enough production out. Mm. So, but there was others, like in my situation, I had a family. I got eight children of my own. And I had a family, and I was working working night shift on top of that. And I used to run. I wouldn't take no breaks or nothing. And so naturally, the ladies that would change these bobbins, well, they couldn't take a break either. Because we would tell the boss, "Look, so-and-so was down in the lunchroom for an hour, and my batteries are getting empty, my looms are down." You know, and so a lot of these women, they were, you know,
battery
tenders, and they were weavers. And if you go down to the cloth room, number five cloth room, there was mostly all women stitching blankets, you know, making the counters, putting the fringe on it, and inspecting, and all that. There was mostly all women.
Who in your mill was admired, or like, and then like, who was looked down upon? Were there?
Well, it seems though that since the weavers were the ones being paid by the picks, this and that, if we lost money because of a fixer, we were reported to the boss, this and that. Why was that machine? Why was that machine down for so long?
Right.
And then there were other ladies. There were what they call room girls. If you had more than 15 thread broke, it wasn't a weaver's job to pass that. It was this room girl to come in and pass it, what they call a smash. You smash more than 15 ends, or else if you had one of these shuttles that would go all the way across because the loom didn't stop right. They would have to come in and patch it up, fix it up and all that. And that's, in the meantime, it's our job. The weavers were losing money because, you know, we can't find the room girl. You know?
And that job was always filled by women?
There were some men on those, yeah. But most of them was women.
Who was more inevitable to be the boss? Was it?
Well, we had, in my situation, we had an overseer. Mr. Lantin, he was an overseer. Under him, there was another supervisor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had to go through the supervisor to hit the overseer. And usually the overseer, you won't see him unless your production's down or you do bad quality work. He's the one that has the final say if you're going to leave, if you're going to, you know, if you come in late, or if you take too much time off, you know, they want to know why ain't you there? Mm-hmm. And in my situation, I was working second shift. In those days, they used to pay with money, cash money.
Oh.
It was cash money. Mm-hmm. And they used to pay us on Thursday, you know. So Friday, a lot of these people wouldn't come in. So this would give me some overtime. So I mean, you could work the 8 hours of the other shift, or you could work 4 hours. And like you say, I needed the money, so if the guy wanted to go out and do his thing Friday night, you know, these machines had to run steady. They run 24 hours a day.
So there were some people that worked after midnight?
Oh, yeah.
Through the morning?
Yeah. When I first started there, I was working third shift, 11 to 7 o'clock in the morning. You know?
Yikes. Did you know anything, or let's see, how about, do you think that the workers were overworked while you were there?
There were some that was overworked, especially if you had, there was cloth doffers. You know, when a roll of cloth gets to be a certain size, it has to come off the weaving machine. Mm-hmm. And there's some of these rolls, they weigh 200 or 300 pounds a piece. There was usually a team of them, two of them, you know. And they were mostly young people, because the old people, they knew how to do it, but the young people was more, you know. Yeah. And there wasn't really overwork, but if they had X number of cuts to take off, the rolls of cuts, you know, they would work straight for 8 hours without a break. And if the way the machine was designed in those days, you could only make probably only 8 bedspreads on one roll, because if you let it go longer than that, there's a bar underneath it would cut the cloth. So you had to get the cloth off and say, hey, this one's got to come off. Well, I don't have time, so we have to leave it stop, otherwise it would be making a second. They have quality control in there. At one time, they hired 30 quality control people. They would come in and they would time us for 4 hours. Mark every little thing we did. If you happen to tie a knot too slow, you gotta find a way to tie it longer. Mm. You know, and you have to, part of a job as a weaver, you had to inspect the front and the back of the loom to see if there's any waste coming up, or if it's making bad cloth. And my hands used to be so tender, and on the sheeting, I would do it stopped weaving and the loom stopped and the thread would break and it would snap. I wouldn't have to look for it. I would go down then also, I could feel it. Mm-hmm. With the thread or whatever broke right there. But a lot of them had to go in the back, and what they had on these threads, they had what they call drop wires. And when the tread broke, this drop wire dropped into a set of gears, you might say. It's a flat set of gears. This is what stops the loom. And sometimes when they used to get dirty with waste, they would ride up, the gear would ride up a little bit, so it would not stop. And sometimes you got a dozen thread coming out, and if you looked at a sheet or something, you can tell if there's a thread missing. I can tell. Mm. Okay. But with the drop wires still running up and the ends moving, so as you walk down the front of the loom, I would put my hand there, all of a sudden, well, there's a thread missing there. Mm. So I would stop it, because it didn't stop automatically. But there was a lot of good weavers that way. They could tell the quality.
Did your father ever speak about how it was harder for him? I mean, because without, he probably felt the effects of no union more, maybe. Did he?
Well, it's like I say, before they had no protection. The workers had no protection. Mm-hmm. If your supervisor didn't like you, and it's just like any other thing, if you had a supervisor that, favored another person better, they would be knocked down for mm-hmm. for whatever the reason.
Do you know anything about illegal discharges into the river during those days?
Well, when I was living at Turner, mm-hmm. we had Robinson. He traveled with me from Turner. We were working the second shift. He was working in the bistro downstairs with the dyes and all that.
Right, yeah.
And they, at one time, it was going in the river. And then all of a sudden, he told me one time that, we can't dye anymore until we find another solution to get rid of our byproduct.
Why did they have to change?
Because of the environment.
Right.
Yeah, because there's some of these chemicals. I mean, we had chemists there, and they had their own office, and you could see all the different kind of chemicals there within those offices. Mm-hmm. And there must have been some that was really too, good.
So, in your father's family and in your family, when your father and your mother both worked in the mill, who took care of organizing the money and all that stuff? Your father.
Well, with a family, I mean, of that size. I mean, my father, he was a good weaver, and then when he went to the shipyard, he was a good welder. He's a carpenter. He helped me build my house, this and that. But he wanted a union, and because we had a little more benefits. When the union come in, we had a little raise, plus we had a small medical thing, and the bosses couldn't fire you unless they had a real good, I mean, the only way they could really fire you, if you stole something, or else if you really harassed somebody.
Do you have anything else that you, you know, any like favorite experiences in the mill that you'd like to share? Or?
Well, that's like I was working one or two weave, which is number one is what they used to make the riplet. I don't know if you know what a riplet. It's a sheet with ripples on it. The hospital have those,
yes.
And they were making hospitals. Sheeting, and they were making a lot for the service on the ships and all that. So we had a small room. About there was 50 of these sheeting of the riplet, and then the other big room, number two weave room, which all was all plain wood weave, was sheets, pillowcases, and this and that, but what was the question again? I got distracted again.
What was, you know, any special experiences?
Well, we had the Karen family. There was the whole Karen family. There was Emil. There was Roger, I think, his sister, and when the Connell Mill shut down, the Bates Mill went from shuttles, they're still using shuttles, but instead of having an automatic battery, they put what they call a unifill. Anyway, so the brother from the Cornell come up and put all these new unifills on our loom, about 100 of them, which eliminated one of the things. But there was the Belange families. There were farmers in Lewiston. They're still farming now, and this and that. And he was a fixer, and his brother-in-law Landry was his fixer. And they were pretty good workers, but you could never find them when you wanted them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There were farmers during the day, and at night they used to come in for an hour, two, and then for the next 3-4 hours you couldn't find them.
Right.
But there was some, you know, there was, if you call that an experience, you know, there was some people. I mean, I don't want to pick out anybody special, but it was mostly a family affair. Once we get to know your workers, because in my being a weaver, you had to work as a team.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have the weaver. You had to have the fixer to fix your loom. You had to have the battery hand to fill your batteries. You had to have the cloth doffer to cloth the thing. You had to have the greaser and cleaner to clean your looms, doff your things. And if one of those it didn't do that their job, what the weavers would be, you know, to lose. And it was all kinds of experiences. Like you say, I've worked in not only in the weave room, but when the weave room shut down, they put me in the spinning room, they put me in the card room, the picker room, the cloth room. And I remember one year before I went to Connecticut. When I got laid off one year in the weave room. Anyway, so it was in April. So I went down to Connecticut, and because they were asking for all kinds of the, you know, Royal typewriters, machine shops, and all that. And when I got down there, I couldn't get a job in these machine shops. I landed up in the mill, mm-hmm. in Manchester Knitting Mills, Manchester, Connecticut. And they had jacquard weave there, but they were doing a lot of nylons, rayon, and they were making parachutes for the service.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then when the Hill Mill, I think it's the Vietnam War, they were making material for shirts, khaki pants and all that. And the Hill Mill workers are so tired of working overtime, they asked for people at the base to go in on weekends to work there. So if there was work, if you was willing to work, you could find work to do. But as far as there wasn't too many bad experiments. There was a lot of these little French people that were really stubborn, you know, setting their ways because they, you know.
What was your favorite part? I mean, did you have, do you have parties together or, like, I mean, anything?
Well, we had, like you say, we had, way back, I don't remember what year it was, but we had, every year they used to give us a party. Mm. I think a couple of years we had an outing someplace. Mm. And we had this and that, but one year they had, they used to hire the Civic Center, where the ice hockey thing is here. Mm. And they used to have a party, and we had somebody from France come over. What's the name of that Frenchman there to come over and entertain for us?
Oh, a woman?
No, a man.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. No, no. No, it was, and,
I'm sure I
would know. Anyway, so we did have quite a few get-togethers. And there was some, like, we had there was, in my, in our wave room, there was Eddie LaGrange, and there was three or four that were having their children at the same time. Mm-hmm. We'd do things. Eddie LaGrange, we all had to work part-time. Mm-hmm. I worked at a cabinet shop after working all night at the Bates Mill. I used to go assemble cabinets, you know, you needed the money. Even though we made pretty good money, it was still not enough to. So this Eddie LaGrange, he was a music teacher. So we went out with him, and he's the one that taught my daughter the guitar, and he taught my son the Jorgen, and my other one, Johnny, there, we're going to teach him to play the banjo, but it never panned out. But we did have a lot of get-together with these other people. There was other couples that, you know, once we get together and we had the same interests, we did go out. But the Mills had some good parties, you know.
Yeah. We saw pictures in the museum. And the hockey team, we saw a picture of the hockey team.
Yeah, well, that was before my time,
So how long did you work total in the Bates Mill?
Well, I got a total of 29 years. Oof. But the thing is, I left. I think they made a mistake there. I left, I don't remember what year I left. But I used to get laid off. Come back when I went to Connecticut for 6 months. There was no work up here, so I landed down there. So I didn't like the mill down there because I was one of the new ones. I mean, I had all the dirty jobs, and I couldn't get a job weaving. I was just a spare hand doing different stuff, taking off cuts, this and that. Anyway, and it wasn't that kind of work that didn't pay that kind of money. Mm-hmm. So I came back, I think, on Labor Day weekend. I called my overseer. And says, Mr. Nortan, says, I'm thinking of coming back to Maine. You think there'll be a job at the base? Well, you come in Tuesday. It was, he says, I'm pretty sure we'll get you a job. So I went down to Connecticut, and I took my brothers. We had three pickups. I didn't have too much furniture. So we came back here, so I went back there. Then back in 19, I left because with the new management in there, they were getting stricter and stricter, this and that. I mean, if you were 2 minutes late, they put you on the carpet, you know, if you did some bad work or something, and they were watching you all the time, and that's when the union was there, and we couldn't work, we couldn't start earlier, we couldn't, you couldn't work on your, they didn't want you to take your break. We were supposed to have 10 minutes every hour. And since I'm not a smoker, and the smoke house was right there in my work. I could see all my work from the smoke house. And these guys would come in, like fixers, take their smoke break. The loom's down because of them. So I used to go sit in the smoke house. This and that, and the supervisor come over. Ahmed, you don't belong in here. He said, why not? These guys taking a break. But you don't smoke, Ahmed. Get back to work.
But you couldn't.
Well, I did. I did. I mean, but that's when the management got a little too strict, you know?
Yeah. And then why did you stop working at the mill?
I had a buddy of mine, he had his own little business, home delivery of milk and stuff, and he come up and gave me an offer that, and I was almost getting tired of the base mill, and he offered me more money, and so I stopped there, and then when I went to work for him about 8 years, I guess. And then his business started to fall back down. Mm-hmm. And so I went back in and go see my overseer there. Nortan. Mm-hmm. He said, we don't have no job for you as a weaver, but you can come in as a room girl job, you know, get me back in the mill. And then I went back in there, then I finally got another job weaving. And then things were slowing down when I call them import, the Chinese bought the mill. Mm. They stripped the mill right down to nothing. From what I could see, the Bates mill, even though they used to stock their inventory, you know, especially their expensive bedspreads, because if the loom is not running, what they would do, they would invest in the cotton and they would store it. I mean, different, like the Martha Washington and the Queens, the good expensive blacks while they had the workers. But when these people come in, from what I understood, they had quite a lot of inventory, and they sold all the inventory, and then they would only manufacture what they needed. If they needed X number of blankets, instead of running our regular number of looms, was about 20 looms, mm-hmm. we were cut down to running two looms, because that's all the orders they had for. So they were paying, that's the same price, paying the fixers the same price, but you're getting probably 10% of the material out, and they wouldn't pay their bills. So every time we had a shipment of cotton come in, even though it was in the warehouse, we couldn't use it. Yeah. Anyway, so and that's when they started laying me off a little bit. And then I went to Mechanical Falls, and I worked for Auburn Manufacturing Company, and they manufacture fiberglass,
right,
blankets for the government mostly, and this and that. And I went to work there. And this and that, but the work at the base was only for 1 month or 2 months. Then they would call you back in when they had orders, and this and that. And this when I started, my wife was working at the base college, and the base college was looking for bus driver. I mean, Auburn School was looking for bus driver, and they advertised in the base magazine, and this and that, and it was in the springtime, I guess she told me about it. Didn't interest me. In the fall, she saw the same. And that time, I was driving for the church. I was a bus driver for the church. So when I went to apply for the bus driver, I had a little experience there. They helped me get my CDL license, which I had a CDL license, but my bus passengers and all that. So I could see the trends coming on. So I decided, and they were closing more and more, and they're always talking and shutting down, and this and that, and which, and then that's about the time, 19. I've been driving bus 15 years this year. So I left there 1985. Yeah, and that's when I decided when there was no more future. Mm-hmm. And then who's it? Fred Bell. He started a little business on the side. You know, he's still running some of the Bates fabric stuff.
Yeah.
At the corner of the mill. He called me a couple of times to go into work for him, but I figure my age, I ain't going back in the mill.
Sounds stressful.
Yeah.
Very busy.
Yeah.
Did your parents stay here and retire here?
Yeah, my father retired from the Bates Mill, and my brother, he stayed. My oldest brother, he stayed in the mill until he retired, I think, from the mill. Yeah, sorry, he has a small pension like I do from the mill. Mm-hmm. And my other brother, Georgie, he went to service. He didn't stay in the mill. And then my children, I got two of them that went in the mill, but they didn't stay.
What positions did they have?
They worked in the weave room. But they had other Pioneer Plastic was here, but in the meantime, I guess when they come out of the service, you know, they figure, so let's go where Dad is, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't, you know. So I've got one now that works at Tambrand. Mm-hmm. I got one that works Pioneer Plastic. They all got good, well, they got a better education than I had, so they had the knowledge, especially in the service, to get all that.
So do you have anything else you'd like to say?
You know, any questions you'd like to ask me?
We've covered a lot.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find. I think that's about all. Because it's my agenda class,
oh,
do
yeah.
you feel that women were treated differently or any by the supervisors perhaps? Or?
Well, there were some, like I said, that did favor some than the others.
Yeah.
That there wasn't, especially after the union come in. And like I say, when I first started working there, that Riplet, number one weave room, it was a small room, and the humidity in there was, it was awful. Especially the number two weave upstairs on the second floor, we have what they call an air conditioner. It was a unifier, and we had pipes running all over the walls there with steam coming out.
Ooh.
Moisture to keep the cotton had to be
moist.
See, to have it has to be moist. When they make a bedspread, they in the slasher room where they make the warps. Well, they have to pass it through the slasher room with the big drums, this and that, and they have to put starch in it to make it stiff enough so it won't come apart.
Right.
And so in the weave room, they have to have that moisture, the humidity to do this.
Mm.
And if you take the queens, it's two bedspreads in one. It's two warps on it.
Mm-hmm.
One is like the sheeting, the background of it, and the other one is the design. The sheeting is a very fine thing, which I don't remember how that works, but I guess the sheeting, which the fine, is shrinks. But the heavy cotton on the top, not shrink, but what's your offset from shrink?
Expand.
Mm-hmm. So this one made the design so good.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have the moisture, and you have to have the...
So we were really hot all the time?
Oh, yeah, it was all over 100 degrees.
Oh.
And no windows.
Did people ever faint?
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. It got so hot in the summertime that they had to shut down the weave room. Yeah. And the other apartments were the same thing. The spinning room, the card room, you go in there, it's just like a foggy, Yeah.
Oof.
And hot. It was mostly hot. Yeah.
Anything else we should talk about? Would have been to know. That was very, very good.